I gather that some of you are a little new, and because your children took part in the Gita camp, they had a nice experience, and so you were invited, and so you're here this evening. As you can see, we like chanting Hare Krishna mantra. I thought I would speak something about chanting first, and then something about Bhagavad Gita, and something about Krishna's appearance, because we just experienced that Krishna Janmashtami. We like chanting very much because the teachings that we've received say that the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the primary means in this particular age to achieve spiritual perfection and elevation. What does that mean? The Vedic picture of time is that time is cyclical. And as time moves, the different ages of mankind, or yugas in Sanskrit, and during each of those yugas, there are certain conditions, just like the seasons. It's hot, it's summer. We know what's next. Already the leaves are starting to turn. Some of the leaves are falling, and fall will come. And we know what's next. We know what's next, and like that, it's cycles. As the seasons turn, so the whole wheel of time, the big picture of time, smaller circle, medium circle, big circle, it just continues to move. The wheel of time moves, matter and events and matter. And in this particular age, and where the position the wheel of time is in now, it's called Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So in this age, many things are described in prediction of what this age would be, or will be, and is turning out to be so. In short, the spiritual inclination is diminishing, and chaos is increasing. It's the tendency for persons to miss the boat, the purpose of life, and pursue other things which are in clash with other people pursuing other things, makes for conflict and quarrel. Therefore, according to the scriptures, the process for this is winter season, so to speak, most difficult one of the four ages. So the process must be the easiest, otherwise people won't take it. Too difficult. So very easy to apply or to accept process is the chanting of Krishna's holy name, or for that matter, any of the names of God. When to inaugurate or to start the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, Lord Chaitanya came. And when he received initiation into the chanting of the holy name, his spiritual master instructed him for 7 days on one verse. And I'll just share what that one verse is. Very simple. Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo, in this age of Kali, Kalo, Nasyeva, 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 Gatir, Anyata. That's the verse. And a rule in Sanskrit is when something is said three times, it's even more than when you're having a conversation and you really want to make sure somebody understands something, so you say it three times. It's for absolute emphasis. As a rule in Sanskrit. So, three times. Harir Nama. The chanting of Hari's name. The name of God. That That is the process kalo in this age of Kali. Na asti eva. There isn't an alternative. There isn't an alternative. There isn't an alternative. Gatir, to achieve the goal or the fruit, fruition of spiritual pursuit. Anyata, there isn't another. So, that doesn't mean a lot of choices. But the application of the principle is found in all religious practices and teachings of the world. It's not unique to Eastern teaching or the divisions of Eastern teaching. Part of my travels takes me to China. That's a very interesting place to visit, very wonderful group of people. And Buddhism is very popular in China. And although they don't have they don't have a very clear conception of God as a person, but part of their discipline includes calling a Buddha's name. Of course, there's varieties of Buddhism. I'll just share this too. One of the places that I presented programs is at Cornell University in Ithaca. And each of the times I've been there, the place they hold the event is the International Lounge in the Student Union. Student Union because it's very accessible, and the International Lounge because it's big and spacious and it's warm. So, like here, they have, worship, study, funding. So, there it's an Ivy League school, so it's a big stone building. And they have these huge, very old-style paintings with huge, ornate frames. And each one of them are Buddhist somebody. And looking closely, they're all holding in their hands some beads, like all devotees hold hands. They hold in their hands beads for praying to Buddha. They're Buddhists who are praying to Buddha. Every one of them. I was a little surprised to see that. And to learn that's an important part of their discipline. I could give you many other anecdotal stories, but in Islam, same. In Christianity, same. In Buddhism, same. And so it's not unique, but there is very clear emphasis on chanting God's holy name and why. It's very powerful. It's means of cleansing the heart, for starters. Chinto Dharpana Marjanam. It makes the heart clean. And as long as the heart is not clean, we're going to be involved in things that happen Kali Yuga. We'll be part of the winter season. We're part of quarrel and hypocrisy and degradation if the heart is not clean. Guaranteed, it's just by default that's what's going to happen. And so, primary means of making the heart clean. The holy name acts like a touchstone. Well, even more specifically, a Chintamani gem. The touchstone is a Sparsha money, and the holy name is compared to Chinta money or Chintamani. Chintamani is what the spiritual world is made of. The spiritual world is conscious. And the holy name, similarly, it being non-different than Krishna, it awakens by contact with the holy name. It awakens our dormant consciousness, spiritual consciousness. Within the body, there's a soul. The soul is what's animating the body. Without the soul, the elements of the body disintegrate thing, you know, death, and the elements go back to the elements. Now, which integrates the elements and makes life is the presence of the soul. It's not a particular combination of elements. It's the presence of the soul animates the body. And the holy name is of the same quality as the soul. The soul is of the same quality as the holy name. And when chanting the holy name, or just hearing the holy name, even children, or even plants, because there's a soul within the plant that makes it alive, or whatever, I'm sure there's some insects somewhere here in the room, and if we don't know where they are, the children will find them. So, the souls of those living entities, they're also affected, spiritually affected. But it's not a matter of intellectualizing anything, is experiential. Directly acts upon the soul. So even without knowledge of what chanting is, it's acting spiritually. And one of the fruits of chanting, along with purifying the soul, is the tendency to, again, direct our tendency for service to the Supreme. Is awakened. Our God consciousness aspiration to serve God is awakened. And the process of chanting side by side with what I'm doing right now, which is I'm going to be discussing a little bit about Bhagavad Gita, it's to help the chanting side by side with the knowledge of transcendence, the messages that Krishna gives, helps to guide our lives properly so that we can have a proper lifestyle and live a godly life. And guide us and instruct us how to conduct our lives. In honor of our Krishna Janmashtami, those of you that are from India, you know, there's a number of appearing common verses. One is certainly appropriate for Krishna's appearance day. Pritranaya sadhunam vinashaya shuduskritam dharma samstapa nartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. How about you say it with me? Pritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chatuskritam dharma samstapa nartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So three things Krishna says when he appears, and that includes the appearance of the holy name, by the way. When he appears, three things. Pritranaya sadhunam, that those persons who are sadhu or saintly or inclined in towards serving God and cooperating with Him, working in harmony with His will, He extends His protection. Vinash is annihilate or remove the adverse influences of the duskritis, those that are opposed to God's supremacy. And the third is dharma sanstha vanartaya. He establishes principles of dharma. He establishes principles of dharma. So as Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, we say 5,000 years every year. Every year is 5,000 years ago. So if he appeared 5,000 years ago, and he gave teachings, so we can say Bhagavad Gita is 5,000-year-old literature. And that's pretty old. And it's endured through all those years and centuries. So it's powerful. That the message is very powerful. But within the text of Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes to Arjuna, not only I'm teaching this to you now, But previously I taught the same teaching to the sun god Nivaswami. Right? And Vivaswan taught it to Manu, and Manu taught it to Ikshvaku, and this way the disciplic succession was established. In that verse, Prabhupada does a little math and explains when Krishna taught Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Vivaswan was something like 3 million years ago. So we can say Bhagavad Gita is 5,000 years old. We can say Bhagavad Gita is 3 million years old. And we can say that Bhagavad Gita is eternal. Because as the Vedas are eternal, as Krishna is eternal, as the Supreme Personality of God is eternal, the teachings, they exist even before creation. And he says that also in Bhagavad Gita. From the beginning of creation, chapter 3. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I sent forth generations of men and demigods, and with them this process of sacrifice. So even before creation, the knowledge of the Vedas was existing. And the knowledge of the Vedas comes directly from the Supreme Lord, as does Bhagavad Gita. So the knowledge of this pretty old book, it's an eternal book. 3 million years ago, 5,000 years ago, and still as relevant and as vital today as it was then. So, I wanted to read just two sentences, favorite sentences, from the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. Just a little story about Prabhupada's life. He made this translation in America because when he was still living in India, he was very determined to bring with him the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he had that printed in India in 3 volumes, and he brought them in, you know, those metal trunks, you know, from India, metal trunks. He had some trunks filled with Srimad Bhagavatam. He didn't have the money while in India to print his manuscript for Bhagavad Gita, but he had a manuscript, a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And when he came to America, you probably know this story, he didn't have any money. Well, he had 14 rupees, but you can't spend rupees in America, so in effect he had no money. And what's 14 rupees going to do anyways? Even if you could exchange it. It was 14 rupees. Then it was 7 rupees to a dollar. So it was $2. But he couldn't exchange it anyways. And so his means to maintain himself was distributing Srimad Bhagavatam to people that were interested. They would give some donation to the author, and with that he would buy vegetables and survive. And you know, he was 70 years old. Anybody here 70 years old? Think about, you know, 70-year-old getting on a boat, coming to America. It's quite a story. But his Bhagavad Gita commentary, unfortunately, someone broke into the place where he was staying and stole his manuscript. A crazy person. Stole his manuscript and stole his typewriter. And it was one of those little manual, portable, not even electric typewriters. The other one, boom, boom. One of those. He stole his typewriter and his manuscript. So he had to create the manuscript over again. But from that experience of being with the people in New York City that he was addressing, he had a very clear sense not only of the ancient history that was along with Bhagavad Gita and the commentaries of previous acharyas, but he had now first-hand contact with his audience, the Western people that he was delivering the message of Bhagavad Gita to. And I'm just going to read two sentences from the introduction. I hope find the page. There we go. Lord Krishna descends. We just experienced Krishna Janmashtami, celebrating Krishna's descent. Lord Krishna descends specifically to reestablish the real purpose of life when man forgets that purpose. That's the first sentence. So, by the way, that's us. Forgetting the real purpose of life. We're moving around and we have some idea, and it's somewhat similar to the person next to us that has some idea and some idea, and collectively we have some idea, but the full and deep sense of the real purpose of life is a bit elusive, although we have some idea. So Krishna takes that some idea and makes it very clear. He comes, he descends to reestablish the real purpose of life when man forgets that purpose. In the second sentence. Even then, out of many, many human beings who awaken, oh, that's the purpose. Now I get it. That's the purpose. Okay, now, out of many, many such persons who have awakened to the real purpose of life, there may be one who actually enters the spirit of understanding his position, and for him this Bhagavad Gita is spoken. I like that. The message of Bhagavad Gita is for everybody. Very widely, Bhagavad Gita is produced in many languages, volumes like this, coming in our Vaishnava calendar in the month of December, Gita Jayanti, when Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. Every year, something close to 1 million Bhagavad Gitas worldwide are distributed, 1 million each year. And since the Hare Krishna movement began nearly 50 years ago, the numbers of Bhagavad Gitas is large number. I should find out what that number is, but it's a big number. So, the message of Bhagavad Gita is for everybody. It doesn't matter where you're born. Again, like in China. This translation in Chinese. In fact, here's some good news. The Chinese government has approved the Bhaktivedanta purports. Not only they've approved it, they print it. And that's very neat, because the author and his movement isn't endorsed in China. Anyway, they have a slogan. In China, there are 5 recognized religions. I've had this recited to me by a government officer. There are 5 recognized religions, and they recite them. And one of them isn't Hinduism. And he's looking me in the eye. Are you part of a religion? And then the other one is, China is a government of law. It's like a polite way of saying you're against the law. You're subject to, you're breaking the law, because they're flat. So anyways, the Chinese government is printing a book. They've approved officially the translation. That means they've studied it. They know what they're doing. They don't know, they didn't make a boo-boo. They know what they're doing. And it's approved. And it's being distributed. And people in China are reading Bhagavad Gita and becoming devotees. And all over the world. And, you know, think of a language and it's available in that language. It's universal. It's not based on something material. Where you're born, what your language is, what your culture is, the color of your skin, your social status, your the IQ, it's none of those things. Just have to be a spirit soul. That's pretty much everybody. You qualify to to receive Bhagavad Gita in whatever language is your language, and the message is to remind you, remind us, remind such persons of the purpose of life when the purpose of life is forgotten. And then comes awakening. Aha! There's the purpose. But then, more rare, most rare, is to, in Prabhupada's language here, actually enter into the spirit of understanding his position. And for that person, the message of Bhagavad Gita is spoken. So Bhagavad Gita is for everybody. But Bhagavad Gita is especially for that person who awakens to the purpose of life, enters into the spirit of the purpose of life, and lives their life accordingly. So we're big fans of Bhagavad Gita, as we are big fans of chanting Hare Krishna. And they go very well together. The chanting of Hare Krishna, as mentioned, it cleanses the heart so that we have the capacity to be awake to our natural spiritual inclinations, which is to be relating in service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead with whatever we do. Yad karoshi, yad asnasti, yad jahosi, yad dasi, yad. Whatever you do, that's pretty broad. Whatever you eat, whatever austerity you perform, coming here, it was raining very hard. There's an austerity to get here. But whatever austerity you perform, whatever charity you may give, do that as an offering to the Personality of Godhead. Perform that as a expression of sacrifice unto the Supreme. And in this way, you're worshipping me. So, the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is just that. There are many parts to Bhagavad Gita's text that help one along the way. And the conclusion of that it's all headed towards is that coming to the position of unalloyed devotion to the Personality of Godhead, to receive that message when hearts have to be pure. And so the chanting of Hare Krishna is there to make our heart pure. And over on the other side is how to conduct the activities of our life that's conducive. It's an atmosphere that's conducive for that awakened state of consciousness. And facilitating, augmenting that awakened state of consciousness. How to conduct our practical activities of life so it matches up the pure state of heart. It nurtures the expression of a pure state of heart. Bhagavad Gita is there for that purpose. So it's knowledge, Bhagavad Gita, combined with a pure heart that comes, at least in part, and very most importantly, from the chanting of the holy name. Done properly, done with attention, not just entertainment or, you know, like a religious act, but where the heart is given to that activity. And the heart is then cleansed by the all pure supreme. And with one other nice little verse that describes the holy name. Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Abhinatvam Nama Namino. This is from Padma Purana. And in the verse, it's describing, as I mentioned before, the holy name acts as Chintamani. As Krishna is fully conscious, the soul coming in touch with Krishna who is fully consciousness, the dormant consciousness of the soul awakens just by hearing that sound vibration of Krishna. Nama, Chintamani, Krishnas. Chaitanya, rasa vigraha. It is the life force of the soul and also of the Supreme. Rasa vigraha. The form of rasa or taste. Krishna has a spiritual form, as his name is not different than him, his spiritual form. When one becomes nicely absorbed in chanting, one can taste the rasa of Krishna, the presence of Krishna, just through chanting. Purna Shuddho, completely pure. Nitya Mukto, always in the liberated position, never contaminated by anything material, never touched by anything material, even in contact with the material atmosphere. The material atmosphere becomes purified, not Krishna becomes contaminated. Nitya Mukto. Abhinatam Nama Namino means there's no difference between the name and the object named. The classic example that's given is water. So I can say, water, 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 water. And it doesn't quench my thirst. Makes my throat dry. Just keep saying it. So the name and the object named are different. But Krishna and the object, Krishna, the name and the person, abhinna, they're non-different. Abhinna tvam, having the quality of non-difference. Nama naminam. So we're associating with Krishna, the Supreme Pure, Krishna chanting. So we like. So we chant a lot when we have programs like this. We take turns chanting a lot. But it's purifying. That's why we do it. Makes the heart pure. And then when we read Bhagavad Gita, we can better understand the message. And as we better understand the message, there's more of a chance it will enter into the spirit of the message. And that's why Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, and that's why Krishna appears. One of the reasons is to give Dharma once again when it's lost. Because he gave it long ago to the sun god Vivaswan. And Vivaswan gave it to his son, Vaivaswatamanu. Vaivaswatamanu gave it to his son, Ikshvaku. And Ikshvaku came from the sun planet to this earth planet and started the sun dynasty and gave those same teachings. Yes? The Surya dynasty gave the same teaching. But Krishna is saying, after many, many, many generations, when that disintegrating succession was broken, knowledge was lost. There were still knowledgeable people. When Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, were there sages on the planet? Highly learned persons? Many. But in Krishna's opinion, the knowledge was lost. Why? Because the disintegrating succession was broken. He says it very explicitly. And so receiving Bhagavad Gita in disintegrating succession, it's not only nice, it's not optional. If one wants to receive the full effect of Bhagavad Gita's message, it's something like there's an electric cable and I wanted to plug some device into the electric cable. There's electricity as long as there's no break in the cable. But if there's some place where the cable is broken, I can take my electrical device and plug it in, but I'm not getting any electricity. Very simple. So we can have a whole bunch of wires lined up over here, and only the one, of all of them, only one is connected to the powerhouse doesn't have a broken line. Only that one's going to deliver electricity. Similarly, there may be many, many Bhagavad Gitas. Those of you from India, you probably read many versions of Bhagavad Gita. I'm from the West, and I read 7 when I was in college before I came across this one. And I couldn't understand them. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't understand them until I read this one. Because this one is very easy to understand. And I couldn't understand why this one is very easy to understand, and those ones I couldn't understand. But then I could understand after a bit. Because it's specific succession knowledge. It's realized knowledge. It's not scholarship. It's realized knowledge. So that's nice, to get realized knowledge from someone. And then at least it gives the opportunity to, in the words that Prabhupada is giving here, have a clear sense of the purpose of life when it's forgotten. And then understand it fully, and then enter into the spirit of it, and live one's life accordingly. And that's a happy life. Krishna wants to give us a happy life in the midst of Kali Yuga, where it's very difficult. You don't have to look very far to find how it's very difficult. Just like look at our own life, it's very difficult. Or our dear friends, someone is, you know, there's a million things. There's an alternative. Yeah, there's an option to go into a sublime life, transcendental life. So that's, we have copies of Bhagavad Gita here. Those of you that don't have a copy of Bhagavad Gita as it is, please take one with you. And those of you that have one in your home, please read this message regularly. Receive that disciplined succession understanding of Krishna's purpose in descending. Bring it into your heart, let it move around a little bit. Feels good. Resonates. And then live your life accordingly. That's the request. Krishna, thank you. Siddha Prabhupada, Ki Jai.